Welcome to Running for Real, a global community with a shared love and curiosity for running. Together we reconnect with the reasons why we love to run and discover ways it helps us become better people. Whether it's the quiet moments of a morning run while the rest of the world still sleeps, or befriending the strangers next to you at the start line of a race, we are here to connect with others who see running as the common thread that weaves our lives together. Come join me, Tina Muir, as I talk with people from all walks of life, united by a love of running. Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 326 of the Running for Real podcast. I'm excited that you are here and excited to welcome back a guest who has not been on the show in 126 episodes. It's easy to remember he was number 200, but also who is someone who from that episode came so much, a friendship, and you will get to hear that friendship on full display today. A podcast you may or may not have heard of, I hope you've heard of, called Running Realize, that we launched and did together 11 episodes, really powerful. You get us here and dissect what we did there, what we would have changed, what we would have done differently, and just get to reflect on that. He is also the founding coach for the Nike Plus Run Club. He is the captain and founder of Black Roses New York City, and he's just everywhere as someone in the space who is always pushing our community along. He's also a very popular iFit trainer. And yeah, he is someone who I have grown to know very well, and him to me. And I'm excited for you to get to know our conversation. This is very Knox and Tina, this conversation. And I hope you enjoy. So let's get to it. Hi friends, quickly interrupting this episode to just talk to you a little bit about Patreon. I know I've been talking about Patreon a lot lately, and I gotta be honest, it really has humbled me in that I have been posting, I've been sharing, and I haven't really seen many people responding to a lot of the things, a lot of bonus materials that I am adding. And while I know those are valued, and many of you have said you really appreciate those extra things, I also wonder if maybe I was putting a bit too much pressure on you with these extra travel together runs, with these Zoom chats, with these extra blog posts, your suggestions for podcast guests, your questions you wanted to ask for weekly strides, a shout out on a together run. There are a lot of things that I am offering here that it suddenly dawned on me might just be overwhelming. Actually, it didn't dawn on me, I'll be honest. I had emails coming in from multiple people who are in Patreon who say, I love supporting you. I love that I give you the opportunity to continue what you do, but I just don't have the time or the bandwidth to enjoy all these additional bonus things. So I just want to remind you that there is a what we call a keeping it real level, which is $3 per month. You don't get any bonuses that are going to overwhelm you and feel like you have to find time you don't have time for to make it worthwhile. You also don't have to do anything. It is just a way of supporting me and the Running for Real team for, I mean, that what's that, like half a coffee these days? I think a coffee is like $5 in most places. But if you want to just go to patreon.com/runningforreal, that's the number four, runningforreal.com, that's patreon.com/runningforreal. It's also in the show notes. You can just support Running for Real at the Keeping It Real level or the Together Team level, which just gives you those travel together runs. Now that is a way, a massive way that you can help me and support me. And if you pay annually, there's a big discount there. I just want to remind you that it doesn't, I maybe have been pushing all these bonuses and talking about all these extra things you get, but if it works better for you just to chip in a little bit to help me support all the work that I'm doing, that means a lot too. You don't have to go up to the top level. So just wanted to be real with you for a minute here and say thank you to those of you who are supporters on Patreon. It means so much. Thank you, friends, and let's get back to the episode. I don't even know how to introduce this. Hi, friend. Welcome back. So much has changed.
And yet... We're stuck in suspended animation.
Yeah. So for the listeners, Knox and I just had a very like us half an hour. So I won't go into that because there's too many other things to say, but it was the perfect example of our situation here. Knox, I had you on episode 200 and it's now, this is 327, I think. But anyway, so much has changed since I had you on. We must have been in the pandemic, but beyond that, I mean, everything has changed and nothing has changed at the same time in many, many aspects. But for those who have somehow not heard any updates, how are you?
Nothing has changed. I'm well. Nothing has changed. I'm still me. Everything is amazing. We're a few ticks down the road. That first conversation actually was pretty incredible because it also it did alter like the course of that we were doing. Obviously we had intensely passionate and ill-advised podcast together. It is awesome. It's also in suspended animation. Shout out to like our patient producer, John, who kind of like, and also shout out to all the guests actually, like when you step back and think about not what we did, but like who we connected with, it's really dizzying. It was definitely like 1.0. It was definitely starter kit. You know, we definitely like did too much.
Really?
No. Yeah. It was ridiculous. I was about to give a coaching speech out here to Good Vibes, Good Vibes Track Club. Shout out to Good Vibes Track Club. And I'm about to tell them about someone I knew growing up, the girl I used to date or whatever. And she said, she always used to say, too much is never enough. And it's great for someone who's like a maximalist such as myself. But if you look at it a little deeper, I'm going to talk on a training level, on a coaching level, like folks are this group is awesome. And I got to like throw a bucket of cold water at the end of the season and be like, you're doing too much, like too many Tuesday night track workouts, too many photos, too much carbohydrate drink mix, too much super shoes, and you're putting it all together and it's still doesn't turn out to be like the marathon time of your dreams. Too much is never going to be enough. And that was us. We had like for our podcast, every episode we worked so hard and like every guest was amazing. Like every guest was like an insane personality. And Tina, if you step back and look at like the best podcasts, the best podcast would have taken one of those guests and spent a year to we were like talking to like people we should have like spent a year talking to.
We
like talked to them for 20 minutes. That's not a fault on them or other. I'm just saying it. We went in passionately.
Came in hot. Yeah.
We came in hot. I mean, we're hot. We stayed hot. But it was definitely too much and it wasn't enough.
Yes. Let's go into that. Okay, so we've alluded to this. I would struggle to imagine many the listeners don't know what Running Realized is. Knox and I did these 10 episodes or 11 episodes, I think, of, as we've said, very intense NPR style. There was a storytelling piece. There was a kind of conversation between us. There was some kind of interview with a quote unquote expert in the field, some kind of creative piece. We were really proud of it. I've also never put so much work into something that was an hour long. I mean, I guess there's people, you probably do more of this than me, put in volumes of time like that for something small. And I guess you could use running as that example, right? So I have done that many times.
Exactly.
But it felt very intense and intentional. And we did topics that were challenges in the running space. really proud of the work that we created and the push that we had. Like I'm still hearing from people who have taken note from things we talk about and changed things in races or in the way that they view things, the way that they cheer for people, whatever it may be. So I know we had some impact there.
No, come on, Tina. what we did on the podcast changed how they cheer people? Dude, it's crazier than that. The things we talked about on that podcast now are like, and this is not touting our own, tooting or touting, but like the things we talked about are now part of the Google News feed. The things we talked about and that we like were dragging our eyes out with our to produce in a great way. Like we worked to produce are now like everybody sitting around the water cooler at the Tracksmith shakeout run before the New York City Marathon talk about like, oh yeah, blah, de blah. Have you heard about Black women breaking 3 hours in the marathon? Oh, have you heard about transgender athletes having their own category and big races? You're like, dude, that was like, we were sitting around like three cities, multiple time zones, obviously. And like, how about we do an episode on non-binary athletes at Trans Rockies? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
well, what's even funnier is that that episode in particular that we did, we were saying how the trail world was leading the way. And since then, the trail world has remained in the exact same spot it was in back then, other than a few races. And road running has leapfrogged over it, and it's still sitting there. And so that one in particular has at least from the friends I've spoken to, trail running has not budged from that position at all. So it's funny, some of them have aged well, others have not. Like the inner disconnect. Hey,
just like running, just like runners, just like some runners we know. Listen.
Well, I think I could fall into that category quite easily. Well, while we're talking about the Tracksmith shakeout, actually, no, let's continue down this with Running Realized. I would love to hear now, you've had some time to process this, and you and I have, you know, talked about this in various conversations we've had over the last few years. What did you glean from Running Realized, or what came out of it for you, other than, as you mentioned already, the conversations and just being able to be in the room with those people, or maybe not in the room in our case?
It was an incredible opportunity that you and John and our guests and our supporters, our listeners, it was an incredible opportunity to tell some stories and tell stories in a particular way, in a clerical format way, but also in an in-depth, unvarnished way, in a first person, in a visceral way. I think all that stuff is really what I love and crave and what I like look for, across the board, whether we're talking about poetry or running or, you know, getting to know someone for the first time, you look for that. So I think that we created something really wild and, but also really like personal and intimate. And I think in a boring way, like as a boring person, you know, like, I guess I'm just thinking about how I haven't updated. Like when we were working on it, when we were interviewing, I was like, I'm squarely in the moment. And then when that moment moves on, that moment remains where it was. And I think that's because like I'm a reader. I think that's because I've always been in love with books. And when you go back, when you pull the book off the shelf, when you go back and like pull the record from the stacks and you put the record on the turntable, what you're playing is like what the artist did in the studio at that moment in time. That's what's kind of like mind boggling about recorded music or like literature, is like, this is what was set down. It's a record. It's literally a record of a moment in time.
Yeah.
And I don't, as a person, I don't update from that. Sometimes it's frustrating for people who are, that I work closely with, like creative partners and whatnot, because they're like, hey, what do you think about this and that? And I was like, well, I haven't updated since like the last call. That doesn't mean I'm lazy, but I just think that like when I'm in the moment, that's what it is. Like Allen Ginsberg says, like said, like first thought, best thought. I don't adhere to that as a creative practice necessarily, but I understand what dude was getting at. Like when you're in that moment, that's so precious and you can't replicate that. And so that's like that's your raw material. And so I think that reflecting on Running Realize, like our raw material was so incredible that like, if, when we do it again, I'll go back and like take that insight that we could take one idea and stretch it out. I learned this when I was a journalist at Fader, and I learned this teaching like poetry and journalism to like high school kids in New York City. It's like everybody is always teaching you and asking you to go big and think big, you know? And I was always going in the opposite direction, no surprise. Yeah. But like to go small and think small and take something granular and mine it and extrapolate it for a larger truth, you know?
Well, it's not like in every episode that we recorded, you'd be like, and Tina's just taking it way too big and I'm just going to bring it back down. Like that was
no big. It's weird. Like people know you on your on this podcast. People don't know me so much, but like, I think people would be surprised if I described it as like a wide receiver. We have this game in the United States called football.
Oh, and, you mean you actually use your foot for the game? Like you should with the word?
At one point, like a one.
Or just one moment in the game, you use your foot. The rest of the time, why is it called football then?
Well, because it's, you know, when you get to a certain level of execution, it's about taking a small idea and extrapolating. And so.
Right. Okay.
Kicking one time would give its name to the entire endeavor. If you were on a football team, I think people would be surprised that you'd probably be that like wide receiver. Like you'd probably be like the wild hectic dude with dreads flying out under his helmet, like running all down and like catching and doing the end zone. I don't think people would think that. I mean, you're definitely not a linebacker, but
I don't really understand what this means.
Your listeners in the heartland. Your listeners will know what I mean.
Okay. I'll find out if that's a compliment or an insult when this comes out.
Yeah, it's definitely a high compliment. I have nothing but high compliments for you.
No, oh, thank you. You know the same back at you. What was I going to say from there about this? You're saying about like the stretching these topics out, and it did feel that way that we were rushing to get these out. We wanted to make these the best that they could be. We wanted to get on a schedule, maybe a bit too ambitious with what we were trying to do. But I would love to talk about for a minute there. You just said about how everyone is, thinking very big, you know, really getting carried away with being wide receivers, if that's what I kind of got of that, whatever that means. But I will say that you have been such a good influence. You know this. I've told you this endless amounts of times. You have been so good for me in that way to remind me to be more in the moment, to, just jump into these opportunities that present, not necessarily like a big campaign or a big project, but like the simple moments that come day to day. And I am like endlessly grateful to you for that. And I've sent you pictures, haven't I? I was out on my long run and I just jumped in this river and thought of you because that's the kind of thing you do. And so
you can't overlook. There's been a few moments that you've had, and it's actually not at all that about like our relationship or you sharing those with me. But I, as an observer on your journey, you have had those moments, the simple ones where we've just jumped in a river. And then like the larger trend, not larger, but like also super rich, transcendent moments that you've had in Hawaii or, you know, like connecting with unexpected personalities, unanticipated conversations that have shifted you in a way, you know, of course the guest has to turn the tables on the podcaster, but in a way you have like a widely received podcast in the running space. And in your life, you've been working really hard to run away from running. And
unsuccessfully,
no surprise to anybody, because you're a runner. And but some of the biggest revelations that you've had have been found outside of like a parochial running context, especially the parochial running context that you enjoyed, or you know, ambivalently enjoyed earlier in an earlier episode of your life. So what's fascinating is that your instincts that there was something beyond pinning on a bib and, you know, running 237, there was something beyond that has had you running hither and yon to find that. And yet here you are back to where you started with those insights. And now you're back at the workbench, like thinking about running. That's awesome. I love that.
Go into that more in terms of for someone who's thinking like, at this point, I know you enough to know what you're hinting at there. But I think some people may, what do you mean by back at the workbench, back at the, you know, back at running? Expand a little more on that.
You just went and like shaved 5 minutes off a course record at a trail run. This is like you've spent your entire social media running cultural bandwidth kicking and screaming about like how much don't make me do this, but like how much you don't like running, how hard trail running is, how much how bad it is and how much you don't like it.
I don't know if I was going there. I think it was
dude, you're just like, you're wringing your hands at every step of the way. You dislike running. You complain about running so much that you complain about other runners. Not only do you complain about your own running, but you complain about other runners. You know what you sound like? You sound like a runner. Every time you're like, oh man, the whole thing about running is tying your laces. I'll sometimes just like get a newsletter and it'll just be like, ah.
Wait, you read my newsletter?
No, I'm lying. But like people send it to me. Like, yo, people send me your newsletter. This is not lying. People send me your newsletter. It's like, yo, what is your girl on about today? And your newsletter will be like, ah, as I tied my laces, I thought about, why are we tied down? Why are my feet tied down and oppressed by these laces?
What are you talking about?
I'm like, oh, geez. Listen, you're a pure runner, like, you know what I mean? And it's great to see you circle back to that inspiration and encounter it anew, right? Like, I was working with this idea several years ago that a Korean Buddhist monk in Los Angeles said, and it's a easily digestible idea, but actually this one dude did say it. And shout out to Hakim Tafari, who put me onto this Buddhist priest. But he said, of course, in the mind of the beginner, the possibilities are endless. And in the mind of the master, the possibilities are few. And you look at it straightforward and you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, well, everybody wants to be a master. We don't use that word after 2020 so much, but the concept of mastery. And so the idea is to like achieve mastery, aspire to mastery, be an influencer, be an expert, be a top rated podcast, but it's a Zen idea. And upon reflection, and I mean like several years of reflection and like meditation on it for me personally, obviously the opposite, not the opposite, but the other meaning is that we should always aspire to the mind of the beginner, the master. Should aspire to the mind of the beginner. We should wake up every morning and like, not should, we could, and we would wake up every morning and consider all the possibilities for the day. You know, it's not about being like an established master and an expert and like telling other people what to do and telling people that's not a master, you know. That's a slave master, maybe. But like, what for all of us, the opportunity exists for us to always embrace the beginner's mind and feel it. And like, that's where you're at right now. That's the joy I saw when you won this race over the weekend. That's the joy that I, when I read your post about it, that's why I started like giving you a hard time about it. Cause I was like, oh, she's back to the beginning. That's a gift. And also in a late capitalist context, it's not held out for us and it doesn't happen nearly enough. So congratulations. I'm happy for you.
Thank you to Tracksmith for sponsoring this episode of the Running Real podcast. You have heard me talking about how much I love the quality of these items, how they last for a long time, which, by the way, is the number one thing we can do when it comes to apparel, which accounts for 10% of global emissions, is to purchase items that are high in quality, long lasting, durable, and ideally things that we can wear for multiple occasions, which is exactly what Tracksmith clothes are. I am wearing Tracksmith items right now, even though I am not running. And I wear them day to day. I wear them on my runs. I sometimes do both. And I am excited to tell you that you can stock up on those training essentials, the gifts for the runners you love with Tracksmith. Visit tracksmith.com/Tina. That's tracksmith.com/Tina. Use code GRAVY20 for 20% off apparel and accessories from Thursday, the 24th of November to Monday, the 28th of November. So you can go get those favorites. If you go to the link in the show notes, you can see some of my favorite items, which include the Brighton base layer, my absolute favorite item. I purchase this for people and will be purchasing this for people for gifts all the time because this is such a important layer. It is ideal for running. It's going to keep you nice and warm on your arms and it's going to keep you nice and toasty on your core. But then once you warm up, it will allow some of the air to leave so you don't feel too hot. It is ideal for this transition time of year. You will also see on there that I love the session pants. Those are some of my favorites for lounging around in. I bought my mum a pair last year for the holiday season. And so again, if you go to tracksmith.com/Tina, you use code GRAVY20. That's going to give you 20% off apparel and accessories from Thursday, the 24th of November to Monday, the 28th of November. Go check it out, tracksmith.com/Tina. To be fair to me, though, I feel like the world was telling me to get away from running. Like every time I signed up for a trail race, something would stop me from getting to the start line. And you know me, I'm very woo-woo in that I kind of believe things kind of work out the way that they do and the universe is kind of planning for whatever it's supposed to be. And so, yeah, I can see how I was very negative at times. and probably still will be. But yeah, now I find myself in a strange place in that I have to figure out what the next directional, I like doing these random things. There's a trail race coming up here that's like 7 miles straight uphill. And I'm thinking of jumping in that because it sounds fun.
You sound like a runner. Exactly. Exactly. You're like, said all this. And then you're like, for example, I like doing, this is listen to your, I mean, no, you don't even have to listen to yourself. That's my job. And that's us. It's our job to listen to you. You just said, so blithely, I like doing these random things. You know, for example, there's a 7 mile trail race uphill. No, dude, you sound like, I don't want to sound like I'm going to be genteel in my language because it's 2023. You sound like a runner. You just ran a 50K.
You finally got to 50K, a 30K.
30K, it's the same. That's the same.
No, that's a massive difference.
A 30K on trails with any degree of difficulty is definitely like harder than a Hoka 50K world record attempt on a flat course with a Carbon X shoe.
I don't have Carbon X shoes. You know this, Knox Robinson.
Exactly. That's how hard your 30K was. There's a 30K. Again, sounding like a runner, but there's this 30K in upstate New York that Nick Thompson and I first kind of like were around. Well, that's a different anecdote, but it's a 30K with 10,000 feet gain.
Wow.
And at the top of the last climb, there's the wreckage, like the fuselage of a Cessna, like a plane that crashed onto the mountain. Like if your trail run doesn't have like the wreckage of a plane at the top, like is it even a trail run? Like, yo.
Okay, but on that note, how are you going to go forward into your running and things like that when you have just climbed Mount Kilimanjaro? How are you going to go into runs and not be like, how does this even count when I just climbed up this mountain?
Well, I'm always going to be in love with these lines from an anonymous Inuit fisher.
Mm-hmm.
At the early recorded by an anthropologist at the beginning of the 20th century. And the lines are, you know, the whole recording is about, you know, being beset by fears about the natural world. And are you going to be able to prepare for your family as you go out for the harvest or the hunt? And how you have to just like have a moment of fortitude and self-determination and go out there. And the recording concludes and said, there is only one thing, the great thing, and that's to live and to see in huts and on journeys, the great day that dawns and the light that fills the world. And mm-hmm. It's that scale that kind of illuminates my life. That like when I'm thinking about, when I'm on summit in Kilimanjaro, I'm thinking about my daughter, my kids back in school, you know, back in Los Angeles.
Is that really one of the things that came to mind when you're at the summit?
For sure. I don't know if this is gonna like fall on deaf ears or like come across wrong to your listeners, but like I act like Jay-Z and Diddy when I get up in the morning. Like so when I'm brushing my teeth. You know, like, so when I'm on top of a mountain, I don't act like I'm Diddy on the mountain. Like when I'm on top of the mountain, I'm like thinking about like people I love and I'm like overcome and I'm feeling humble. You know, I think that's also one of the incredible experiences about trail running actually is that like, it's so emotional. And like when I'm working with like new runners, when I bring people up to Bend Trail or like working with people on their ultras and shout out to all like the elite ultra runners out there and professionals and all that. Like, but the visceral experience of the sky bearing down on you, like the immensity of this endless sky bearing down on you. And then the intensity of this, like Earth's crust, like this infinite expanse and infinite time of rock pressing up against. So the hardness of the rock and the airiness of the sky meeting on the one plane, and you're the fulcrum. Like when you're running across that rock face with all that beauty, and maybe your legs are screaming, or maybe you're like well fueled and it's fine. But nevertheless, you're the fulcrum between, you know, heaven and earth. And, mm-hmm. And if you're that point, that intensity is really tough for like the human body to be like to be that channel, not to take it to an esoteric dimension, but like that's kind of one of like what the existential challenges of trail running and trail racing can be, is like you get out there and all of a sudden the sky is pressing down and the earth is pressing up and like you're the meeting point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the challenge in it. And so yeah, and then you can throw an altitude on that and all of a sudden you're crying, you know?
Yeah. I felt that you mentioned about Maui earlier, like obviously you had you shouldn't be like about comparing experiences, but I definitely felt that when I was at the top of Haleakala in Maui, very similar thing. You're at this, it just made everything crystal clear and made me realize how small I was and how, how simple life actually is when I was standing there looking down into this like crater and same thing. Feel the sky, feel the earth. Never felt yeah. more connected to Earth. So I was
summoning Kilimanjaro, and I felt like I was a son of Africa, you know, like for me as like a Black American mm-hmm. to be so traumatically and torturously removed from the land of my ancestors mm-hmm. to have been afforded the experience, privilege or happenstance or work, you know, or not, to go to the highest peak in Africa is a profoundly spiritual experience. But not unlike a profound experience to run in Comrades, to run, you know, the world's ultra marathon, and it's a hard race or whatever. But I'm still running through Zulu heartland when you're running Comrades. And so for me as a Black American, Comrades Marathon is a profound experience. Yeah, sure. But also like the first time I felt it, you know, I was in like Fela Kuti's house, like as a young music journalist for the Fader magazine. 22 years ago actually, like around this time. But I was in Fela's house, and I was like around Fela's wives and Fela's dancers, and actually I was like riding around Lagos in like a metallic gold Mercedes Benz with Fela's son, you know, like screaming through the sunroof. But like to think that, you know, they had this moment where you know, you have like American guilt, first world guilt or developed world guilt, class guilt or whatever. And so I was in Fela's house. This was the year 2000. I think it was my first trip to Africa, mm-hmm. There in Lagos, Nigeria. And Fela Kuti, your listeners will know, but this incredibly titanic force in world music definitely was like had one of the best bands of the 20th century. Several of iterations of this band, incredible music. So check out Fela Kuti for folks who are hearing about it for the first time. But I was in, he died in 1996, maybe in 2000, I was there like digging on his legacy and writing a story and causing trouble. Anyways, one of the roadies or one of the guys in the band, wringing my wrists. I was like on, you know, young Tina. I was like, young Black male Tina in Lagos, Tyrone Muir. I was Tyrone Muir there, you know, like wringing my hands. And this brother just like was smoking on a spliff, and he's just like, he just turned to me in the haze and he said, Mother Africa has a story for each one of her sons and daughters. And it's up to each one of her sons and daughters to uncover and discover what that story is and tell it.
Wow.
And obviously, since our species originated in Africa, mm-hmm. we're all sons and daughters of Africa. But yeah. that was just like sitting around like smoking weed in Nigeria, like in Fela Kuti's house, you know, like 20 plus years ago. But the idea was so liberatory. Mm. It is at once so liberatory to free me up from the vicissitudes of personal history and also like political and like, you know, temporal history, but also gives you a mission, you mm-hmm. know, like what's your story? Like the story's there for you already. But you're the only one to discover it, you know? Someone can come along and pull you to the side on Maui and give you a little energy. And someone can hold up a mirror. You know, this is what coaching is like. You know, I know people came to you for like running podcast talk. So this is what coaching is like. It's like you're just holding up a mirror to someone, you know. You're in that typical Zen example, it's just blocks of stone and you're just like removing, or wood, and you're just removing the sculpture that's already there. That's what coaching is like. Sorry to all the immaculate coaches who are tuning in right now. I'm not going to mention you by name. I'm not going to give you the gratification of me dissing you on Tina Muir's podcast. I know you guys think you're rewriting humanity with your immaculate workouts, but all we're doing is removing We're not adding. Mm. We're just removing and revealing what's helping reveal what's already there.
Thank you to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode of the Running for Real podcast. Now, you've heard me talking about Athletic Greens for years now. It allows you to say goodbye to piles of pills and countless powders. One daily serving of AG1 delivers this potent blend of 9 health products, a multivitamin, minerals, probiotics, adaptogens, and more. It's the comprehensive foundational nutrition you need with the convenience for your life demands. Now, that applies to me in a way I cannot even describe. With 2 young kids, I know I should be getting 27 different fruits and vegetables in a day, but honestly, some days I'm lucky if I can get 1 or 2 at dinner. And it is difficult for me to take care of myself with just this hectic life that I live. So while I want to make these green juices every morning, with a juicer machine with the kale and the ginger and the lemon and all those other things, I just don't have the time for it. I can barely get to stuff something down my throat to eat. And I love that I can wake up before the girls wake up, drink down my 1 scoop of Athletic Greens with ice cold water, drink it down, know that I've got 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients to start my day, so that even if that day ends up being hectic and running around all over the place, I know I've got that in. It tastes good. It's almost a slight pineapple-y taste. I love drinking it before I run. I drink it and go immediately out the door. It's going to help with your gut health. It's going to support your immunity. It's going to boost your energy and help with recovery. What more can you ask for with 1 scoop? So you can go to athleticgreens.com/Tina. You will get 5 free travel packs and a 1-year free supply of vitamin D3 and K2. Now, as we head into the winter months, that is when we need that vitamin D, and it works well with the K3 as well to absorb better. We need those to protect us from all the nasty sicknesses that are coming around. So be sure to go to athleticgreens.com/Tina to go check out my special offer and stop stressing about not getting those fruits and vegetables in. This is going to take care of you.
I have to say, yeah, I find it hard with the coaching side of things a lot of the time with like last weekend for me being a prime example. I have done very little lately. I have no structure. I jump in friends' workouts occasionally, jump in long runs. And it really made me think of all the energy spent on trying to get the perfect workout or trying to make these build-ups line up, when really the workouts themselves, yes, okay, you need certain elements to if you want to maximize potential, but that matters less than, you know, what's going on in that person's life, the kind of mental side of it, the, as you said, holding up a mirror to someone to seeing what they need to be, to believe in that potential. The workouts themselves, at least from what I can see, matter less than I think I thought they did before.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely like true and not true. That's definitely like a viable and a valid idea. But then what if you design the workouts along that principle? What if you crafted workouts along that spiritual idea instead of like, recruiting mitochondria idea? Like, what if you...
Isn't that kind of what Ryan Hall did, though?
Who did?
Isn't that kind of what Ryan Hall did towards the end of his career, but it was God guiding him?
I'm not a born again Christian apologist, but I'm not like a friend of like white male hegemony or like white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And I was out of running for a lot of time for Ryan Hall's whole mythic rise.
Yeah, that's true.
But I was watching on the TV on the laptop the year he wilded out in Boston at the end of his career. And that changed you. That was transfigured. I mean, he was transfigured in that moment, you know, like all the Bible verses and the Christian proselytizing. It plays well in America, because obviously like that's like that's like what the system has been thrust upon us, but he took it to another level, and since that time, and then wasn't rewarded. Then, you know, ran one of the illest races of all time, one of the fastest times. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, that was peak moment in white history. I know white folks got their little moments, but that was like a peak moment in white history. And then when it was over, people went into the rule book, like did the most white thing possible, went right into the fine print. And it was actually like, actually fam, it doesn't count. So at his whitest moment, the blackest thing happened to it. Cause that's what they do to black people all the time. Mm-hmm. Like black people overachieve. And then the system comes and it's like, actually, we found this little rule that it doesn't count. Ryan Hall had the peak white moment, and then they went to the rule book and they're like, to the white Christian blonde best runner of all time, it was just like, actually, your time doesn't count. That's when I started falling in love with the dude. And since that time, he's only stayed black. Actually, if I like had a job in the media, if I really had a running publication under my control, the indomitable blackness of Ryan Hall. This is the kind of thing I used to write about when I was in music. I'd write about Eric Clapton, you know, like I'd write about Eric Clapton, you know, in this way. Ryan Hall had an Eric Clapton moment.
Okay.
You know, you gotta think Eric Clapton was like a peak moment in white history. They said that when you would go to London, that it was just spray painted on the walls, Clapton is God. That's what the graffiti used to say. Not even fuck the man, fuck the graffiti. All these motherfuckers would just write shit like Clapton is God. And Clapton took his girlfriend out on a date to a little underground cafe in London just to see this guy, blues guy came in from, you know, hey, babe, you want to go for a date? You know, take a girl out. Eric Clapton, go to the VIP section. And the guy on the stage is just a weirdo black dude from Seattle named James Marshall Hendricks. Mm-hmm. Outside on the brick wall, it says Clapton is God. And then Clapton sits down, rich, drugged the fuck out. And then all of a sudden, he just sees James Marshall Hendricks do stuff that he had never even thought of. They said Jimi Hendrix, the reason they killed Jimi Hendrix is because he had figured out the frequency to like make shapes and colors come out of the air. Like he could like play the guitar up against the amp and like get it right. And then he'd play like in the studio and like he could make the air vibrate and turn colors and shapes like there sonically. Mm-hmm. I know we're losing a lot of followers on this, but
like, where is he going with this? Yeah.
Clapton was king of it all and it crushed his brain. And from there on out, he like knew he was never going to like get that far. He had all the privilege and all the prestige and all the promise. And what did he do? He got strung out on heroin. He fell in love with his best friend's wife. His best friend's wife left the best friend and like went with him and then went back to the best friend. And that's when he wrote Layla. That's what Layla's about. Mm. And then since that time, obviously everybody knows he's dapper, he's rich, he's incredibly talented, and heartache and heartbreak and the blues that he wanted have followed him in real life every step of the way. Mm-hmm. He lost his father and this is a man who lost his father and his infant son. That's the blues.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted and that's what he got. And that's black. And that's what happened to Ryan Hall. Ryan Hall took it so far. And since that day in Boston, I mean, he retired after that, adopted four black girls, became a black dad, and doesn't even run and just lifts hella weights and is like walks around like he's on Muscle Beach in Venice. This dude looks like Ryan Hall looks like he just got out of jail. Like, I know everyone thinks he's great and Men's Health wants to do a feature on him. And yo, Ryan Hall's physique is like jail level physique. Like, this Ryan Hall looks like he just got out of prison. That's how chiseled this dude is.
I mean, it's.
I love him so much. I couldn't. Since that day in Boston, I've only grown in love and admiration for this. I love Ryan Hall. I love the Halls. I love Sarah Hall. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody knows she's sensational and like what's going on in her running and in life just continues to boggle the mind. And mm-hmm. you don't want to comment on it. You don't want to have her on your podcast because you just want to keep eating the popcorn and watching. Like, you don't want to push pause and be like, let me go to the bathroom. You're just like, I'm just going to keep eating popcorn because she's incredible. And now, yeah. obviously, their daughters are incredible and their daughters are on their way. Yeah. So shout out to the Hall family. The whitest, the blackest white family in America.
Well, as much as I have loved your whole tangent there, having 10 minutes of your professing your love in a really roundabout way for the Halls there, I want to bring it back in just for rounding this out. We got off topic with the coaching. You have been coaching. You have multiple people you coach, but you've been doing a lot of focus on a lot of women in the space who you saw potential is in, who have had the potential and now have done it, breaking 3 hours in the marathon. Episode one of Running Realize was about how there was the list, and at that time, 20 women. Black women in the US had broken 3 hours. Tell us about some of that, like that journey to, you know, before you were sharing stories about people, you were helping grow Black running culture, but now you're a part of the change. What does that change in you?
Yeah, I mean, you're holding up the mirror to myself, but I'm real. Our podcast was cool.
I'm not saying that was the impetus. I knew that was already on your mind before that one.
No, it wasn't. The podcast, after what happened after the podcast, was annoying because we let off. We had a little boost that hit social media. We turned some people on, and then people were running down the road talking about the list. Rightfully so. You wanted to raise the awareness. But, like, I got agitated and annoyed at, like, our own work. Like, people were talking about the list, like that was the point. Mm-hmm. When the point of the list was
the list.
Opposite was true. And so then I was like, no, it's not about like the list or getting on the list. It's that the extent that there's a list is fucked mm-hmm. up. Mm-hmm. And so I just like a couple months later, I just had to start telling people like in Black Roses, Black women, I was like, we got to destroy the list actually. And people are like, no, what do you mean? We're so close. I was like, no, dude, we got to blow up the list. I mean, I know that's not like fit for public consumption. Shout out to all the allies out there who are like telling the story about the list. Keep on doing it. It's crucial. But I just mean like on a philosophical and a justice level, mm-hmm. like it shouldn't even happen. That doesn't mean don't talk about it. Kyle Merber, talk about it, please. And Chris Chavez, thanks, guys. And thanks to like white women allies out there and all the sisters who are like inspired to join the list. Let's train. But the idea is to like get so many people on the list that it goes away. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That we have so much participation.
Yeah.
And we have so much excellence and so much performance that it makes it goes away. And also shout out to the people who just want to support it and like run 4 hours or 5 hours or don't run at all. Like that's, mm-hmm. all part of the conversation, you know, the culture. And so I did have to go to become a little more activist, you know, and that felt good, you know, because now we have three people on the list. So shout out to the women I've coached who, or with whom I've worked, who are on the list. And, you know, there's, you know, three or four or five around who are chomping at the bit or waiting for a downhill course with a strong tailwind.
You downhill though, you know, taken away from you, definitely. They go for Boston.
Sheesh.
I've loved seeing it. I've loved Yeah, as a fully with you.
Crazy. It's crazy that it's a thing, right? It's, and also shout out to Gary Corbett, the son of Ted Corbett, New York Pioneer Club member, and the United States' first Black American to represent the country in the Olympic marathon back in the 50s in Helsinki. His son, Gary Corbett, maintains the list and creates the list. So shout out to the elders for sure who are maintaining that. I'm just a disruptor, sadly. I wish I was rank and file. I wish I was, you know, an insider, but I'm unfortunately like an agitator.
But that's what's needed.
It's a tricky thing to put food on the table when you're just out there.
Oh, I hear you.
Cocktails. You can't eat Molotov cocktails. You dig?
I hear you. I'm in the same boat many times. Knox, I could talk to you all day. We did cram this in a small space, but thank you for I'm tempted to say your support in me. Let's say your at times not so gentle shoving in a direction I often need.
Everybody else. You got a lot of friends. You got a lot of people around. You got a lot of love, right, man. That's so I'm freed up from having to do that. You have all the good graces. You've got a great family, and you've got a great support. You know, you've got a great community. Mm-hmm. So someone's got to come up and
you're my disruptor in that situation. You can't help yourself being disruptor in all kinds of ways.
There's this thing, and I know we gotta go, but like there's this tool in Zen Buddhism. It's called the Kyusako. It's not Gyakso, like the Nike inspired Japanese inspired sportswear, but Kyusako with a K. Mm-hmm. And it's a series of bamboo shafts 6 feet long that are tied together. And the abbot, I don't like to use the word master, but the abbot's walking around, and when the student is like at the peak of their most intense meditation, like meditating on Satori, transcendence, enlightenment, they're at the peak. And folks in Black Roses or who I coach will know that this is probably revealing of my coaching practice. Right at the moment where they're meditating their hardest for this many days, the teacher will come around and hit them as hard as he or she can across the back. There's this idea that shock can send someone on into enlightenment. You know, I like to think that maybe I could be that in your life. Like when you're working so hard, you got everything, you're doing all the work, and someone's got to come and just throw a bucket of cold water on you.
Yeah, that's definitely your role.
It's meant with love. You know what I mean?
Well, I can't say I give you that role back, but hopefully I have some positive benefit in your life as well. Because
you're a friend when I don't haven't always felt that I've had one. So,
I love you, and I always will.
I appreciate it.
All right, friend. I appreciate you joining me. I wish we had had more time talking about you and what you've been up to, but I guess we'll save that for another one. We won't wait as long next time. And
We should start a podcast together.
Yeah. Stay tuned to the listeners. We'll see where this goes. Maybe Running Realize series 2 will come in like 2027 or maybe something else. We'll see.
It's already in my calendar.
What was that?
It's already in my calendar.
Oh, thanks. Great. I'm glad I've been added to your calendar. All right. Thank you, Knox.
All right, bye, dear.
The Running for Real podcast and everything we do here at Running for Real would not be possible if it wasn't for the Running for Real team. While I am the person who you hear from most often and maybe the face of the brand, the rest of our team are such critical pieces of what we do. And without them, I think I'd just be running around in circles with ideas. So I want to take a moment to thank our team. To Jeremy Nessel, who's been with me since the very beginning. Kat McKay, Sally Pontarelli, Kelsey Wang, Sandy Gutierrez, Louise Murphy, Andrew Basola, Alexandria Will, and Maria Vargas. Thank you to each and every one of you for all that you give to Running for Real and our community. I appreciate you, and I'm so thankful for having you as a part of the team. There you really got to hear the true relationship we have. I know he went off on a tangent there. And I didn't actually get to ask him a lot of the things I intended to. I will admit that episode I had to rush off. I had another interview that I had put a bit too close to that one. And so we didn't even get to ask. I didn't get to ask or talk about a lot of the things we want to. I wanted to and wanted to dig into. So maybe there will be another something coming soon. Stay tuned. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoyed getting to know Knox a little bit more. He has become an important person in my life. And it was great to talk to him, as always. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can go find links to everything we talked about, as well as where you can find Knox at runningforreal.com/episode326. You can also find links to Running Realize there and to our sponsors today. You can go check out Athletic Greens, get that 1-year free supply of vitamin D3K2 by going to athleticgreens.com/Tina. You can also check out Tracksmith, who are offering the Elliott Runner is now available. You can go to tracksmith.com/Tina to go check that out. And I also want to encourage you to go check out Patreon if you have not already. You can go to patreon.com/runningforreal with the number 4. I will put links to all of those in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you have a great weekend, and I'll see you on Monday for another Together Run.